And on ABC Radio and on your pod, you're with me, Noel DeBairn. And with me now, joining us from London, is Colin Blakely, the editor of the Church of England newspaper, one of the largest publications in the English-speaking world for Anglicans and Episcopalians. Colin, your first time on the program, and welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Colin, we read, of course, your paper here with careful attention, and I noticed this week, even though it's not the lead story, there is something which is, I think, fascinating for the 23 or 24% of Australians who are Anglicans, and that's a rumour on page 5 that the Archbishop of Canterbury may be about to retire.
Yes, this was a story that came out in the Sunday Telegraph last weekend, and I have to say that we've heard ourselves that it's highly likely that Archbishop Rowan Williams will step down from his post ahead of the Lambeth Conference. Now, the next one isn't due until 2018, so it's still quite a long way away. And the idea is that he would give his successor time to prepare for that. So we might be looking at 2, maybe 3 years before then that he would go. The idea is that the Lambeth Conference is such an important feature of the Anglican life internationally that an archbishop would want to be there and to follow it through for some time. What the Sunday Telegraph is saying is that he's actually going to retire or resign next summer, just after the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. That's the first time we've had such an early date mentioned. But what gave the story some plausibility is they're saying that Trinity College Cambridge is going to offer the Archbishop a professorship, so they're going to endow a new chair there for him. Now, there's a slight questioning about that, because it wouldn't be for Trinity to establish a professorship. That would have to come from the university itself, and so far we haven't heard that there's been any talk about that. It almost wouldn't be a surprise, because we know he's from an academic background, and that is really where he feels most comfortable, most at home. And we have an example of this happening just last year, because the former Bishop of Durham, Tom Wright, who's well-known internationally.
Well-known here, yes, of course. Yeah.
Yes. Well, he resigned as Bishop of Durham to take up a post at the University of St Andrews in Scotland. Now, he's another academic, and it seems that that is where they feel most at home, rather than running a diocese or running a church. So it would make sense that Rowan could go and do that. Now, he is only 61, be 62 next year, so that would give him a decent length of time up until his retirement. What's been most surprising about all of this is that Lambeth Palace have made no comment whatsoever. So although this is a speculative story that's been run, there weren't any identifiable sources that we could check this against. It does seem that because they've been silent about it, the rest of the media have now taken it as fact that he is going.
Another Lambeth may be, I suppose, not the most attractive of propositions for the Archbishop of Canterbury. The last one was not the easiest process. And in fact, your lead story this week refers to one of the bones of contention, I suppose, that have been racking the Anglican Church, and that's the ordination of women.
That's right, and I would have to say that I don't think anyone could blame Rowan for opting out of all of the church politics that's going on. But the story on our front page, it's following up on the continuing debate on the ordination of women, and as we've got the debate here in General Sydenham next July, which will decide whether women can become bishops here. When it was first possible for women to be ordained priests, there was a big row, particularly in Parliament, and a lot of parliamentarians were concerned about what provisions would be there for traditionalists who were totally opposed to the idea of women clergy.
Well, you indeed had the arrangement of flying bishops and alternative episcopal oversight and all sorts of provisions made, didn't you?
That's right. Lord Habgood, John Habgood, who was the Archbishop of York at the time, negotiated this, and it was commonly believed at the time that it wouldn't have gotten through Parliament without that provision. Since then, there's been a group that have been agitating for this Act of Synod to be rescinded, because they believe that basically it's a two-state church where there are areas that women priests are not allowed to go. And they feel very strongly about this. They feel that their ministry is being questioned by the traditionalists. But, of course, the traditionalists maintaining their opposition to the very idea of women priests.
Of course, in Australia we have Sydney Diocese, and we have other dioceses where it's not been accepted, but the majority have accepted. What you seem to be reporting on this week is on a group I'm not familiar with, but the Group for Rescinding the Act of Synod. Now, what's that?
Yes, this is part of what used to be, way back in the old days, the movement for the ordination of women. So it's all the supporters of women priests. And what they've done, they've issued a report this week. They've looked into the functioning of that Act of Synod, because traditionalists have said that when that came in, they were given all these cast-iron guarantees about their status in the church, and now the church is going against that, and they're being sold out. And this group for reforming the Act of Synod have analyzed the text of that act and analyzed what has happened in the church since that time. And their conclusion is that none of the promises that were made in the act to the traditionalists have been broken, so they've got nothing to complain about. Now, this is going to be quite significant ahead of the debate in General Synod next July, which will decide whether women can finally become bishops. One of the important things in this debate is that it's gone through synod. It's been a long process, and each time it's come to a crunch point, both Archbishops of Canterbury and York have pleaded with synod to maintain this arrangement for traditionalists, and both times synod voted against them. So this legislation has now gone out to the diocese, and all of those that have voted, they've all voted in favour of it. But there's also been an amendment to provide a similar sort of arrangement to the flying bishops. And in most of those dioceses that have voted on it, they've rejected it. So the traditionalists are really looking at a situation next summer when they're going to have women bishops, and the likelihood is there'll be no provision for them at all. They'll be told either like it or leave it, like it or leave us.
Another crunch time coming up in the Church of England in particular. Now, of course, in Australia we now have women bishops. New Zealand has them. America has them. There are considerable parts of the Anglican Communion that already have them. But that brings me to another story in your paper, of course, on, I think, page 9, and that is the report on Archbishop John Hepworth, who, of course, leads the traditional Anglican Communion, which is a split-away group from the Anglican Church, largely because of the ordination of women and other associated issues they consider liberal.
That's right, yes. And this traditional Anglican Communion, fairly Anglo-Catholic group, they've taken up the offer of the ordinariat there, but there are still issues that are ongoing. But this group is certainly on that side of the church, of the traditionalist side, who are opposed to women and the other liberal directions that the church in America and Canada are going.
Here, in 2005 on national radio here, Archbishop Hepworth claimed 450,000 members worldwide on the ABC's religion report. Currently, he's claiming 400,000. I'm not sure whether that means 22% have disappeared or whether others have rejoined the Anglican Church or what exactly it means. I think in Australia there's probably roughly 1,000 on the mainland, and there would be 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 perhaps in the Torres Strait. But the story that's running is actually about the Archbishop himself, not on the traditional Anglican Communion.
Well, that's right. I've been in this job, working at this newspaper for about 25 years, and this is the first time I've had a headline that says, Archbishop says, I was raped. And this happened in Australia when he was in the Roman Catholic Church, and the experiences that he suffered there were so traumatizing that he fled to Britain. Eventually he went back, and of course now the pendulum is swinging in the other direction. With this traditionalist Anglican Communion going into the ordinariat, he will be back in the Catholic Church that was the focus of all of his earlier trauma. But he's saying that although the church is full of sinners, it's still God's gift to the human race, and I've never lost this sense of vocation of being a priest. So even those traumatic things that happened to him seem to fade into second place towards his feelings about the institution of the church.
It's certainly a complicated story in that the traditional Anglican communion would certainly line up with the right-wing, conservative, highly traditional factions within the Roman Catholic Church. The group which is dominant, I would say, internationally at the moment, certainly in positions of power it's dominant, and so they would line up with an agenda which was opposed to gay clergy, opposed to acceptance of gay lifestyle, opposed to women being ordained. It's effectively a pretty hard-line church that he runs when it comes to adherence to biblical teaching and traditional Christian teaching.
Yes, and that's why they would find it almost a home from home being taken into the Ordinariate, into the Roman Catholic Church, because that hard line on traditionalist doctrine is something that we see coming from the Vatican, and that's exactly where they are as well.
Well, that connects me to yet another story, I have to say, the Anglican Church being a complex organisation. I think it was page 6, gay clergy to be excommunicated. Now, this is another facet of the Anglican Church, the African Anglicans. Now, what's this story about?
Yes, well, we've had all of these debates about the gay issue, and we've seen a law that was put up in Uganda to criminalise homosexuals. But this is actually happening in Zimbabwe, and the Bishop of Harare there has been criticised by others in Zimbabwe for saying that they're too close to the Americans and they're too liberal. He's come out with this statement saying that if any clergy are found to be homosexual, then he's going to kick them out of the church. So it's a very hard-line stance. But what we have to look at here is the political environment, because you're saying this is on page 6. Actually, the whole of page 6 is about what's going on in Zimbabwe, because the previous Bishop of Harare, Norbert Kanonga, mm-hmm. who is closely allied to Robert Mugabe, was effectively kicked out of the Anglican Church, and Chad Gandia was appointed in his place.
Well, there was a lockout, I believe, if I'm remembering my history correctly.
That's right, yes. And we understand that the Archbishop of Canterbury himself is going to Zimbabwe next month when he hopes to meet with President Mugabe to try and resolve this dispute. Because what we've got at the moment, and we're getting stories almost every week, where Kanonga's faction is moving in to take over parishes. This week they're taking over orphanages. There have been stories of them taking over schools and other church buildings. So anything that was part of what was the Anglican Communion is now being taken over by Kanonga. And this seems to be Kanonga's group who are making these accusations against the Gandia people, the official Anglican Church, branding them as liberal, branding them as pro-colonial or whatever, using any sort of tactics to diminish them in the eyes of the Zimbabwean public. And that, I think, is what has sparked this very hardline comment on the gay agenda from the current Bishop of Harare. But it's all part of an ongoing political battle there over church property and who is the real Anglican group there.
So it's a far cry from the Bishop of Hampshire, which the Archbishop of Canterbury distanced himself from, of course, when the Episcopalians in America went ahead with Gene Robinson's ordination as bishop. But at the same time, it's sort of a preparatory shot before the Archbishop of Canterbury arrives in Africa.
Yes, I think it probably is. And perhaps one of the reasons why Rowan Williams would want to leave and go to the world of academia, because the differences of opinion are so entrenched and they're so intractable that the traditionalists and the liberals, if you like, if I can be so broad brush in my description of them, have not come together. There's no middle ground for them to exist on or to talk on. So they seem to be going in two different directions. And what Rowan has to do is walk a very fine line with this, from what's going on in this country, in America and Canada, and what's going on in the African situation. He will need the skills of a diplomat when he goes there.
Colin Blakely, editor of the Church of England newspaper from London. Thanks for being part of the program.
Thank you.